Puranani, Twaya Kalu Puranani, Sitihasani, Chanaga, Chitihasani, Chanaga, Akyatani, Api, Aditani, Agyatani api aditani. Dharma shastrani yani uta. Dharma shastrani yani uta. Super. Risaya, the sages. Uchu said, Twaya, by you, Kalu, undoubtedly, Puranani, the supplements to the Vedas, with illustrated narrations, Saitihasani, along with the histories, Cha, and Anaga, freed from all vices. Akyatani, explained. Api, although. Aditani, well read. Dharmashastrani, scriptures giving right directions to progressive life. Yami, all these. Uta, said. Translation. The sages said, respected Suta Goswami, you are completely free from all vice. You are well versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life, and in the Puranas and the histories as well. For you have gone through them under proper guidance, and have also explained them. Purport. A Goswami or the bona fide representative of Sri Vyasadeva must be free from all kinds of vices. The four major vices of Kali Yuga are 1. Illicit connection with women. 2. Animal slaughter. 3. Intoxication. 4. Speculative gambling of all sorts. A Goswami must be free from all these vices before he can dare sit on the Vyasasa. No one should be allowed to sit on the Vyasasana who is not spotless in character and who is not freed from the above-mentioned vices. He not only should be freed from all such vices, but he must also be well-versed in all revealed scriptures or in the Vedas. The Puranas are also parts of the Vedas, and histories like the Mahabharata or Ramayana are also parts of the Vedas. The Acharya or the Goswamis must be well acquainted with all these literatures. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. Hearing is called Shravan, and explaining is called Kirtan. The two processes of Shravan and Kirtan are of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. Only one who has properly grasped the transcendental knowledge from the right source by submissive hearing can properly explain the subject. So this purport is very clear. I mean, it's really to the point. Prabhupada is explaining there are the various Vedic literatures. They must be spoken by one who is not affected by the vices of Kali. So who basically is thoroughly committed to the four regulative principles. And then the discussions, the Shravan and the Kirtan, is more important than just reading. Because in this Shravan and Kirtan, we actually are looking at these various topics in different ways. Different speakers may emphasize their particular understanding And in that way, our understanding grows by hearing and discussing. So this is our business. It's really what we do on Savan and Kirtan, these two, again and again. And here the topic is, we're in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, and the sages of Naimisaranya have assembled. Naimisa means the place where the Lord never closes his eyes. So Naimisaranya is therefore known as a place where one is especially close to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore a holy place. Therefore the sages had assembled there. And of course, Naimisaranya, if we go there, we will find that many pilgrims go there. And there is this big round water basin. It's a big round water basin, and it's not so deep, and it's like a wheel, so it has two rings, and on the outer ring there is water, and people are walking through that water in the ring. What's going on? They're walking in a ring in the water. It is because it is said that actually Naimisaranya, believe it or not, is the center of the universe. Okay, there it is, the very center of the universe, and in the center of the universe is Srimad Bhagavatam. Because it is Srimad Bhagavatam that is spoken in Naimisaranya. One might say, well, you know, that's interesting. Probably the writers of the Srimad Bhagavatam made that up. No, that's actually the fact, the very fact. At the center of the universe is Srimad Bhagavatam. For all ages and all times. So we cannot live without Srimad Bhagavatam. We are half dead without Srimad Bhagavatam. If somehow or other Srimad Bhagavatam is not part of our life, we are not living, we are ghosts. So it is our main book. Everything is about Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita, introduction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, leading up to the Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavad Gita tells us very little about Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita, digesting Srimad Bhagavatam in a deeper way. Deep reflections on the Bhagavatam. The nature of devotion, practically the main body of evidence quoted. Nature of devotion is a compilation from various verses, from various sources, various scriptures. But the main source is Srimad Bhagavatam. Basically, Manikta devotion is a systematic way of mapping out the process of Krishna consciousness from its initial stages to its most advanced stages, and it's all based on Bhagavatam. So like that, Bhagavatam, as it is described here, where was that? In the word for word. Yes. The Puranani, the supplements to the Vedas with illustrative narrations. So Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with illustrative narrations. Therefore it is sometimes, by some, considered to be of secondary importance. And because they feel like the real thing for the people who are really intelligent It's just a philosophy. And once they have the philosophy, they've got it. What they need illustrations for. Illustrations are simply to drive the point home. You know, for those who didn't fully get it yet, so then there's illustration. So is the logic. If it's the Vedanta Sutra, the Vedanta Sutra is the end of all. Therefore, it is, you know, Vedanta Sutra. Sutra means it is in a small code form. Small code form. And Vedanta is the end, the conclusion of all the Vedas is there in the Vedanta Sutra. Therefore, they will say Vedanta Sutra is the topmost literature. And it is the fact that the Vedanta Sutra, see, the Vedic literatures is not just one book, it's a library, and so many books. And then how can you remember it all? But the Vedanta Sutra is a very concise outline, you can say. It's what they would call an outline nowadays. And then, you know, just the bone of the Vedic. Now comes the illustration, the bone of the Vedic, literature, the skeleton, and then you can fluff it up with so much detail and so on. So it seems that one who gets the essence has the highest, so the jnanis, the philosophers will say. But the devotees, they understand it different, because they understand nigamakalpataram phalam sukamukam anditadrava samyutam Pirata Bhagavatam Rasamayam Mahurahu Sika Bhagavu Kaha. They understand that Bhagavatam is the topmost, that it is the essence of all Vedic literature, because they understand that the Bhagavatam is not only giving the philosophical understanding, which is the theory, the Bhagavatam gives the practical taste. The Vedanta Sutra may establish that Janmadhyasya, it may establish. It may establish Janmadhyasya Yataha, that the Lord is the origin of everything. It may teach us that, the Vedanta Sutra. But for the devotee, it is just relishable to see how everything relates to Krishna, to find every detail about Krishna. So all these narrative, illustrative descriptions are actually filled with nectar, filled with sweet descriptions of the endless features of the Supreme Lord. As devotees, our business is not just understanding. Not just understanding who is the Lord, how is he the Lord. No, our thing is then to appreciate how wonderful is the Lord. And that is missing in the Vedanta Sutra, because it's only the bone. It's only the understanding of the position of the Lord. The Vedanta Sutra makes us understand the position of the Lord. But okay, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, we got that. Can we move on, please? Can we now hear, you know, what he's doing then? Can we hear that? Yes. So, like this, can we take it a step further then? What's God doing? Okay, he's God, you know. Fine. That's nice. Now we know that. And then what? Then what's he doing? Eternally, forever. Sits on the throne forever, always, eternally just sits on the throne. Alright, interesting. Actually doing a lot more. So Bhagavatam describes all the things he does. He steals. Everyone has the stealing propensity. We have to control it. But God, he doesn't. Why does he have to control it? Krishna sometimes was caught as a child stealing in someone's house. And he said, "You thief!" And he would turn around and say, "No, I'm not a thief. You are a thief." What do? If you catch a thief in the house and he goes like, "I'm not, you're a thief. We wouldn't be so impressed. So people were also not impressed with Krishna's answer, just thinking, you know, childish excuses, but not childish at all. Because he is the supreme proprietor. So here are the pastimes of Krishna, in line with Vedanta Sutra, establishing Krishna as the supreme, but very sweet. And then Krishna takes revenge, and the Supreme Lord, those people that call him thief as well, then the Supreme Lord goes into their house and passes stool and urine in the house. That's the Supreme Lord. What can we say? How can people understand this? I mean, this is too much. If you go to some church as a guest speaker, you will present this about God, it will be too much. Yeah? People shake their heads. Because all their whole understanding of the Supreme Lord is covered with awe and reverence. He is the Almighty. Yes, he's the Almighty. He is, of course, he's the Almighty. You know, I mean, he controls the entire. Yeah, he controls the entire universe. Yes, he does, and all the other universes as well. By the way, yeah, and he's certainly the Almighty. But that's not all there's to it. That's not all there's to it. He is Allah. Yes, God is one. Yes, he is one. But he's also many. He's also many. Don't you see? Don't you see how all this variety is here? He is one. Open your eyes. He's many. Look. There's everywhere his energy all over the place. You don't see. Allah, he is one. Yes. But he is also many, simultaneously. He also has Ananta Rupam, unlimited form.
But the Bhagavatam supplies us with all that philosophy. But the very here, he's all one, but we also see the varieties of things. Just like someone just asked me a question about whether Radharani actually knows everything about Krishna. And how do you answer such a question? You know, like, I mean, it's like we are on the ground and we're looking up at Radharani with a telescope, you know. I mean, she's further away than the stars from where we are. I mean, she's more exalted, more elevated than the stars. And what do we know about the stars? All that we can do is look at a telescope. So, with a tool. But we turn to the perfect telescope, not faulty Hubble, but the perfect telescope of the vision of the pure devotee. And the pure devotee, named Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, writes that book called Prema Samputa. And it's a very sweet story, which I will not tell you now. But at the end of the story, Krishna had come in a hidden form as some sort of goddess to question Radharani about her love for Krishna. And it came to the point about separation, and where Krishna, disguised as a goddess, is asking, and Radharani doesn't know, and is asking Radharani, Radharani was saying that Krishna is always thinking of me and I'm always thinking of him. And in this way we are not at all separated. We are never separated. In fact, we are one, because we are one in mind, one in thought. And then that goddess said that you might think like that, but does he think like that also? Maybe it's just your wishful thinking. And then the goddess said, but if you can bring Krishna here just by thinking of him, then I will believe it. So Radharani closed her eyes and thought of Krishna. And then when she opened her eyes, Krishna was there and the goddess had disappeared. And she's just sick. And Radharani saw Krishna, was overwhelmed, and I said, where did that goddess go? Oh, she had to leave. Prema Samputa. Short conclusion. So it's interesting how Radha and Krishna are one. So Radharani, yes, she must know everything about Krishna. Although Yogamaya, even from her, hides things from Krishna. And Yogamaya, the covering illusory potency, hides things from Krishna. So all this can never be understood by the great intellectuals who actually memorize the Vedanta Sutra. By memorizing the Vedanta Sutra, it is a systematical outline, and from there one can branch out into all the different branches of Vedic knowledge. The four Vedas, you know, through the Vedanta Sutra one has captured the whole thing. And from there they could expand and just open up, click on the outline, it all opens up. Like that. But they miss the whole point. They miss the sweetness. They miss rasa. They miss the taste. It's not the Lord's business to be all powerful. It's boring to be all powerful. If you're all powerful, it's not much fun, you know. It's like, I am Asamurjwa. I don't have any equal. Next. After a while, you know, it's like, I mean, don't even try, you know. Because, again, someone wants to compete. It's boring when you're always, when you're almighty.
What is the...
So the interesting part of Srimad Bhagavatam is that it points out that God is not just love, that God is not just looking after the welfare of all living beings, that he is Suyam Sarvadeyam, the well-wisher of all living beings, as Bhagavad Gita, but that is only preliminary knowledge. Yes, he is that, but there is much more. He has his own purpose also. The Supreme Lord, his life is about fun. It's about having fun. That is the secret. And why wouldn't he? Does he have to work all the time? You can see, you know, like you read the Jehovah Witness concept of heaven, and based on the Bible, where there is a quote where it said that at the end of times, 144,000 will go to the heavens. So they say 144,000, they will go to the heavens. But for the others, there is no problem, because paradise will be here on earth. And, you know, it's going to be wonderful. You're going to be together with granny, your auntie, your uncles, and everybody's going to be here. But it will become perfect. All the problems will be gone. Everybody will love each other. and it will be paradise on earth, and you know, and all that. And but what about the 144,000 that go to heaven? What about them? Too bad for them. It's too bad for them, because they have to work. They have to assist God in making sure that all these other guys in paradise are getting everything they need. They work overtime. That's 144,000. You really look at it. You check out the theology. I'm not trying to. But I'm not on an attack, in an attack mode. And, I'm simply trying to point out that God is not working. He's not the order supplier. That's not his business. Yes, he also does that, but that's not his. That he does through laws and through his energies. That he does automatically. He doesn't need to bother with that. He's got better things to do. Enjoy him. He is Bhuktaram Yagitapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwara. He is the supreme enjoyer. Who's there? Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. So that is Bhagavatam. And therefore, we like to read every detail. And then we read commentaries of the acharyas, who are like visionaries, who don't just read the Bhagavatam, but look into Bhagavatam. I mean, you know, like Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentaries on Bhagavatam, he just reads these verses, and then there are all these discussions going on between Krishna and some devotees and this and that, and then go like, how does he know all this? Sometimes people ask, how does he know this? Is this like, is this what he sees, or is this just what he thinks? What he thinks, what he sees, it's all totally transcendental. Krishna reveals himself in his thoughts, Krishna reveals himself in his vision. Krishna is revealing himself to such acharyas, and the acharyas are revealing to us. And in the same way, Jiva Goswami, so this is the Sarartha Darshini commentary of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur on the 10th canto. It's super interesting because it adds all kinds of details. It's definitely something to read, because you get like all those questions, like Putana went back to the spiritual world, and then exactly what happened, right? It's described in detail. So we heard that Putana was promoted to be a mother because she offered the breast, and with it, of course, with the intention to give poison, but she was also offering milk, so therefore Krishna also took it. She's my mother. So he just purified her from the impurities, through a process of sucking out the life airs and a few little things, so she got a little purification. But then after that, he took the motherly intention and kept that intact. And then she became a mother. Is it like Putana became a mother? Then it says in Vishnu Pratya, she became a datri, a nurse, an assistant, one of the nurses around Yasoda who are helping and who make all the arrangements, but who are full of loving motherly feelings and then so on. Okay, so then it sort of clicks, It's just the penny drops. Now we understand how it actually works by the explanation of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur.
So these...
It is said that Vishnu says, during the Rasa dance, Krishna was dancing with all the gopis, and there was a form of Krishna between each each two gopis. There was one Krishna in the middle with Radharani, and then there was a form of Krishna between each two gopis. But each gopi somehow or other saw that Krishna was interacting with them. So that was already far out. But then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't want to display his Aishwarya. He doesn't want to display all this opulence of taking on many forms. In Vrindavan, he takes on only one form, the form of Krishna. Therefore, during the Rasa dance, when Krishna showed many forms, actually, he didn't expend himself. But he moved so fast. He moved so fast between everyone that it looked as if he had many forms. Says Krishna Chakravarti Thakur. And it's quite amazing. We read such things. It's interesting. It's just like, and it just takes us deeper and deeper into the Bhagavatam. So like that, through the commentaries of the Acharyas, we are entering further. Jiva Goswami gives us his Gopal Champu. And first he sets the stage at Vrindavan, the place where the pastimes of Bhagavatam are taking place. And as he is describing Vrindavan, he begins to describe Govardhan, and then he says that Govardhan in the spiritual world, because Govardhan originally is in the spiritual world and much bigger than the Govardhan here. And he says that Govardhan is made of jeweled slabs, not just jewels, but a slab of jewels. So it's quite impressive, kind of like, whoa, mind blowing. Anyone who would see that, anyone who even sees that in the mind, anyone who just even tries to visualize that, is just inconceivable, overwhelming. So like that, we are visualizing Srimad Bhagavatam because we want to see Krishna. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there is the description of Gopa Kumar and his gradual journey to the spiritual world. And at one point, Gopa Kumar has come on the planet on Tapaloka. And in Tapaloka, there are all powerful yogis, followers of the four Kumaras, and their main business is meditation. They meditate, and Gopa Kumar comes there, and Gopa Kumar is expressing to them that he wants to see the Lord, and they say, "Why do you want to see?" Seeing happens in the mind, you know. And philosophers, modern philosophers, say exactly the same. Like Bertrand Russell writes the same thing about how whatever you see creates an image on the retina, and then from the retina it sends an image to the brain. Therefore, seeing really happens in the brain, right? And the same argument is there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there on Tapaloka. The residents of Tapaloka say, we're seeing in the brain. We're only seeing in the brain. So why do you want to see? Just meditate. Just meditate and everything is perfect. And they all sit there and meditate. But Gopa Kumar says, but I'm not satisfied when I just meditate. I also want to see. I want to drink the form of the Lord with my eyes. I want to hear. I want to smell. With all these senses, I want to simultaneously perceive the Lord. Because it's all ecstasy. And this is Srimad Bhagavatam. The ecstasy of Narada Muni is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. And what do we find? We find that all the senses of Narada become ecstatic, because all the senses are independently perceiving Krishna. Smell the tulsi at the lotus feet of Krishna, with the sweet fragrance of Krishna. The nose is just like, has never smelled anything like that. The nose is just in ecstasy. Then the eyes are just seeing the form of Krishna and popping out of the sockets. Meanwhile, the ears are just growing in size, hearing the tinkling of Krishna's ankle bell or the flute. And in this way, all the senses are overwhelmed and competing with each other, or with one another, for prominence. And that causes a state of utter confusion. And therefore, in that state of ecstasy, Narada is just like totally bewildered and overwhelmed, because all these different senses are competing with each other. So the devotee wants to know everything about Krishna. Everything. But not everything. We don't care to know everything. We just want to know everything. You got that one? We want to know every detail, but we don't care about the bigger picture. And see, the devotees don't care so much about the bigger picture. Krishna is the almighty supreme personality of God. He's all pervading. Oh yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Look at his lotus eyes. It's just amazing. Just look at that. They get cooked up. The devotees are relishing every detail. I want to relish the detail. The jnanis, they want to just withdraw their minds from the details and go into the bigger picture, the underlying truth. And then we can agree with the Islamic jnanis and say, yes, Allah, yes, God is one. Alright, he's one. It is true. But we want to know how he's many also. Yes. Yes, he's one. There's no one else. Oh, Lord Narayan. Oh, my dear Lord Narayan. Have you seen Krishna? Said the gopis after the Rasa dance. My dear Lord Narayan, my dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, please accept our most humble obeisances. Have you seen Krishna? Nothing else to ask for. No other interest. Kichi kilai bhaktya vasudeva parayana. Only vasudeva parayana. Only Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Every detail. So who cares to know everything of Krishna? We want to know everything about Krishna. We want to know every detail of Krishna. And just one detail. One detail is enough. One can just look at Krishna for hours at the swinging of the shark-shaped earrings. A devotee can just, spend a whole day just looking at his earrings. Look at those earrings. Look at those earrings. What? Earrings? Earrings? The other devotee is seeing the mother of pearl nails of Krishna. Have you ever seen such nails? 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 Only see earrings. Earrings. Like this. Every detail is so absorbing. Every detail is so meaningful. Nothing is casual. See? We're here in this world, everything is casual. It's like, let's go to the real thing, Kauri Kanchini, sex and gold. Let's get down to the real business now. Everything. It's like there's only so much casual things, so many things, so much detail, not of importance. But with Krishna, every detail is filled with unlimited meaning.
and therefore just focusing on one detail is enough. What more is there to know? Is there anything else to know? That flute. That flute. Is there anything? What else is there? Totally taking over everything. That flute. That speaks. It speaks but differently to different devotees. Calls the cows who must come. It cannot help but to come. Calls the gopis. Makes Lord Shiva, who is otherwise seated in meditation, in silent meditation. No one can break his meditation. He sits there just in deep meditation. And it's like Susie is Krishna's flute. Meditation, you know, no more sitting, just dancing like mad. With his different drum. Krishna is Nataraj, the dancer, the king of dancers. Greater dancer than Lord Shiva. Krishna dances on the hoots of Kaliya. Can you envision it? Can we see it? And what Sanatan Goswami saw was that it was such a terrible situation that the residents of Vrindavan saw how Krishna was just captured by this snake, jumping on the hoots. Yes, amazing, but still these hoots were there trying to bite Krishna. So they were just totally torn apart. On the one hand, it was just amazingly beautiful to see the graceful dancing of Krishna. On the other hand, I mean, those hoots were really dangerous and full of poison and so on. And it's like it's really trying to bite the Lord. So stop this dancing. Although we wish this dancing to go on forever, but let us stop it right away because it's just too much. And then at one point it was just too much and the brain just stopped to compute. And they were standing there and couldn't register it anymore in the brain. At that point, Krishna invited the gopis to also come in the hoods of Kaliya. And they had a whole rasa dance, Sanatana Goswami said. They had a whole rasa dance and no one saw it. The other residents couldn't see it anymore because their brains were like on tilt, right? Cannot compute anymore. So they were all just standing there. And meanwhile, Krishna is having a long dance with the gopis, like as long as the night of Brahma, you know how long these rasa dances take, right? You know that's going on. On the hoots of Kaliya, what can we understand about the pleasure pastimes of the Supreme Lord? What can we understand? So, all that we want is just a drop. Just give me a drop of your mercy, please. Just a drop. Because a drop can drown the whole universe. So just give me a drop. That's all. Okay, I'll stop now. Any questions, any comments?
Marjan Bhagavat, it was mentioning what the link between hearing and reading. How hearing and explaining gives realization. I was thinking about in relation to what you said of like independently thoughtful, and it seems like reading gives more to be independently thoughtful.
Yeah. What? Reading gives more scope for being independently thoughtful?
Yeah.
Okay, she's referring not to today's lecture, this independently thoughtful, but to something I said in Johannesburg, but she's been flying and therefore she's all over the place. That's what you get when you fly. There's part of your mind is still in Johannesburg and part of your mind is here, and it's all like, turns all into kitschery.
Welcome to the jet lag.
To be independently thoughtful doesn't mean to be independent. It is explained in the 11th canto. There's a very famous verse in the narration of the Avadhuta Brahmana. And at one point in the narration of the Avadhuta Brahmana had many gurus. He saw like all these different gurus in the world around him. And then that verse stresses that one should have many gurus, like the Avadhuta Brahmana. So then the acharyas, they comment, and there's commentaries on that verse from Sri Goswami, from Jiva Goswami, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And they all highlight the same point. How can it be that, you know, one should have many gurus, whereas generally one has one guru, right? To whom one dedicates his whole life. And then all these others are there to help us understand this knowledge in a deeper way. So, independently thoughtful, which we must be, we must think for ourselves, we must not just be sitting there like mental tape recorders and just like parents repeat what we hear. On the way, we have to think about what are the consequences of all this, and then how does it work? And that's independently thoughtful. So hearing from others who are independently thoughtful will only extend our scope. When we read on our own, we'll just be regurgitating our own mind, our own thoughts. And we read the same thing again and again, and each time we think, yes, we have our same understanding of what we're reading. And we'll just sit there in our own little mind, going in circles. Yes. But as soon, and then someone else speaks and just cuts into it, breaks open our circle, and takes us into a whole different thing. Jeez, I never thought of it like that. And even if you think, it's really funny, if you give a lecture, people still don't hear what you say. They hear what they associate with what you say. You say something, and you know, and sometimes some people especially are not very focused. You know, they don't have a very good lens, right? Which has, doesn't have a good focus at all. So it's very broad. So you say Vrindavan, and they just they don't hear what you say. They just have their own ideas about it. And if they ask them to explain what the lecture was all about, it turns into something completely different, 10% different. They didn't hear what was said. So hearing is, it's so difficult for us to actually hear, to actually register what, to go to someone else's thought world. We just stay in our own, little thought bubble. My thoughts and my vision of how it is, and this sort of thing. Here I am, in my little bubble, looking at the world, and I've got it all figured out. That's a wall, that's a tree, that's a house, and put everything in categories and boxes. And as soon as I see something, I'm going to put it in a box. I know already everything. I'm not a kid anymore. You see, when I was a kid, I was just overwhelmed and amazed. But now I'm not a kid anymore. So now I have my boxes, and anything I see, I just put it in a box. And then, okay, I got it labeled now. Done. So that's over. Finished. Okay. It's like me, girl. Okay, got a girl label. Finished. Next, it's like,
we've got your brihat, you know, fire.
Okay. We're in the hot box.
So everyone goes in a box, you know, like, for you we get a little bigger box. Everyone get a box. Where you fit, you know. So labels. You just put labels on everything, and then that's it. Then we don't have to think anymore. It's already, it's done. You know, it's got a label, and we stop thinking. And that's what we do in the world. We just have our labels, and we just put labels on things, and this way we categorize things, and that way we have an understanding of what we're dealing with. But as soon as you hear from someone else, gosh, you know, puts another label. And you're like, jeez, I never thought of that. Just the labels change. So in that way, then you have to think about it independently. And in that way, hearing is actually broadening our thoughtfulness. The independent thoughtful element means simply that we for ourselves have to take this knowledge that we hear, think about how is it true, and what are the consequences of this for my life. Because all this knowledge is engaged, it is, we are part of it. Yeah? It's like, you know, one thing that quantum mechanics figured out is for a long, long time, modern Western science was operating from the platform of the objective observer. The whole foundation of Western modern science is the objective observer. And quantum mechanics broke that paradigm and basically said, no, there is no objective observer. We're always part of it, whatever we're observing. So this is a fact. This is a fact. We're part of it. So, therefore, whatever knowledge we hear, what does it mean? What does it do to us? This new label, this new understanding of the world around us. And that's the independent element in being independently thoughtful. You know, that we have to figure that out. How does it affect me? Because everyone, see, we're in the room, and everyone has his own spot. I once read in one book that actually that everyone finds a place in the room where they feel comfortable, and they always sit in the same place. You know? And it's like when someone else is sitting on your spot, you sort of feel uncomfortable. You know? Somewhere or another, everyone has a spot. And you notice that, like, you were back after a long time in the same spot. That's why you never left, because it's in the same spot. Because in my mind, I labeled it as, okay, that's her spot. Anyway, so like that, suddenly, now we have to figure it out for ourselves. How is this Krishna consciousness relating to me? Because I am in a unique position, not the same one as everyone else. Therefore, we have to be independently thoughtful. So we take the instructions, but now, how does it fit for me? Like, that's where the independent element comes. But to hear from others, very stimulating, because it takes us out of our little labeled paradigm. And the other.
How do we create a situation so we can get absorbed in Bhagavatam?
Well,
It's like we have to bring the Bhagavatam back to the world where we are. As long as we see that Bhagavatam is one thing and the world where we live every day is another, then it's very difficult. But the more we start to see Bhagavatam everywhere, so therefore, by being thoughtful, since you were speaking about that, we have to sort of see the Bhagavatam. You know, it's like, and of course the Bhagavatam is about this world, and it shows a path in this world, and it shows, different people affected by the modes of nature, and of course we can see that, and we can see the Bhagavatam, we can see the spiritual path, we can see how to, through the Bhagavatam, we can see how to engage things in the service of Krishna. Through the Bhagavatam, we begin to see what is valuable, what is not valuable. So the Bhagavatam is here, we're living in the Bhagavatam. That is the point. It's not just a book somewhere of like far out stories and amazing philosophy. No, the Bhagavatam, we're right in the thick of it. Then we can get it out. Because it gives the purport to everything we see. It gives us that deeper vision instead of just, seeing, Rondebosch station. We're seeing that, here's Krishna's energy. And what are people doing with it? They take all this metal from Krishna, from the planet, and with a lot of trouble transform that thing into like a big train which runs on the rails to take people to work so they can make a lot of money that they can enjoy and maintain their family because they want sex life. I mean, the train is running on sex life, and some are not happy with sex life even after that. So they spray the train with graffiti. you see the Bhagavatam are riding fast. So the more we begin to see like that, the more we get absorbed. Okay.
Prabhupada in the purpose talks about how, he mentioned how one should never sit in the place of unless
he's qualified.
Yeah, basically. So my question is based on this concept of anatta nivritti, or the nivritti mark, where we focus so much on the dots.
The dots.
So, and how do we then balance the two, where we, you gave a very nice descriptive class on the pastimes of Krishna in relation to that.
Yeah, so don't just focus on the dots. You already said we have to balance the two. That's what the nature of devotion says, do's and don'ts. It is sarva vidhi niseda shur etiyo eva kinkara. It's the vidhi and the niseda, or the prohibitions and the positive injunctions. Both are there. And we need both in spiritual life. So when we are trying to focus on to the don'ts too much, then we become fanatics, and we become stormtroopers, and we become regimented, and we make the process very unnecessary, austere, and dry, and we drive people away with that, and we drive ourselves away. So, therefore, you see, you know, that Lord Chaitanya's movement is always full of nectar. And it must be. It must be. You can see, is Prabhupada an example of the one who is hammering on the rules? Oh yes, he was keeping the standards, not compromising them, not giving them up, but he had a pot with gulab jamuns in the National Spirits, which was never empty. And I've said it many times, every ISKCON temple needs such a pot with gulab jamuns. And everybody could take as many as they like. And I think Ketan really needs it. I think that was a mistake and we stopped that. I think we made somewhere along the road we made a mistake. We got rid of the public gorgeous. That was a mistake. Thank you very much. Shubhava ki jai.
Я не знаю, что я вам скажу, что я не знаю.